week with a response of, I know, to a citizen shouting, there's a genocide happening in Palestine at one of his speeches, triggering a Netanyahu election intervention. The Israeli leader and International Criminal Court genocidaire at large is demanding Canada's acting prime minister now backtrack your irresponsible statement. Eve Angler is a Canadian journalist, author, and activist. He's written 13 books on and about the perfidy of Canada and its foreign policy, the latest being Canada's long fight against democracy. Eve's recent election coverage at his site, eveangler.com, asks, why the double standard about Israel's foreign interference? Welcome back to the program, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure, of course. And Eve, I mentioned there was somebody intervening on a Carney event. You had a brush with greatness yourself in Montreal today. Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, I showed up at Carney's hotel 2 weeks ago, leaving McGill. At the student strike, I just happened upon a big liberal bus, and I realized that meant that Carney was probably at that hotel, and I later saw him. Anyways, when I knew he was in town, I decided to go by that hotel, and I saw lots of RCMP there, so I knew he was there. And this morning, just as he was leaving to a event, I was waiting outside, and I told him that it is a genocide, and I told him, referring to him kind of walking back his agreement with the heckler saying it was a genocide, where he said he sort of seemed to suggest he agreed and said that Canada has an arms embargo. And I also said to him that he should cancel the $79 million artillery propellant contract that Project Plowshares recently uncovered from a General Dynamics facility here in Montreal, Valleyfield, Quebec, which is going in part to Israel. And and then I followed him. Actually, I biked when he left the hotel. I followed him about 2 or 3 kilometers by bike, much faster than his bus in Montreal traffic went on my Bixie. And he went into the Banquise, which is a well-known poutine restaurant. And I told him that while he was eating his poutine, he should think about the genocide, and that the Québécois don't support the genocide. I was able to communicate the anti-genocide message to him in two different spots in the city today.
Well, is that true? First of all, that Plowshares .ca did an article last month, Canada under contract to supply the IDF with artillery propellant. As you mentioned, that first intervener at the Carney event, Carney answered, I know, and that's why we've got an arms embargo against Israel, which of course isn't true, and that was put to the lie by this Plowshares.ca article, Canada under contract to supply the IDF with artillery propellant. So we're literally providing, we're propelling a genocide, even as the government here says that we are not involved military, providing military equipment to Israel.
Yeah, for sure. And even if Canada had an arms embargo, which it doesn't, Carney is lying, Melanie Joly is lying. We actually occupied Melanie Joly's office a week ago, calling on her to end this contract from General Dynamics in Valleyfield. Now, even if Canada actually had an arms embargo like they claim, the main violation of the arms embargo, of course, is shipments to the U.S., and that's always been Canada's main shipment of weapons to Israel, is not direct contracts, but is via the U.S. Department of Defense. And that's what the artillery propellant contract is. And we don't, under the Defense Production Sharing Arrangement, we don't even know about Canadian arms shipments to the U.S. that then go on to Israel. We only know about it because in some cases, the U.S. Department of Defense announces it. So even if we did actually have a full arms embargo and there wasn't weapons coming from Canadian factories via the U.S. to Israel, Canada is still assisting the Israeli military. We don't hear much about it, but we know there's intelligence sharing. We know back that the Communication Security Establishment has been working with its Israeli counterparts. That's been released by Snowden. And we also know that there's all these registered charities that have been assisting the Israeli military, subsidized by all taxpayers. The most egregious example is, of course, the Hesek Foundation, set up by the owners of Indigo, Heather Reisman and Jerry Schwartz, which has sent $200 million in heavily subsidized donations to assist non-Israelis joining the Israeli military. So Canada assists the Israeli, you know, war machine. But even the thing they say they claim that they have, you know, brought in, which is an arms embargo, which again Carney a week ago restated, is not true. And that just goes to the fact that two parts to it, I think, that are important. One is that they know that the public is very uncomfortable about what Israel is doing, and that the idea that Canada would be providing weaponry for that makes, you know, that's why they want to claim they have an arms embargo. And the second part to it is of course, that it just speaks to how integrated, how supportive Canada is and has been with Israel. The fact that even when they have a pseudo arms embargo, you know, it still most of the arms go to Israel through the U.S.
Your statement that the Quebecois do not support what's going on. They don't support Israel. They don't support Canada supporting Israel. I'm looking at the Vote Palestine pledge platform, and it breaks down candidates in the upcoming election who have signed on to the Vote Palestine pledge. And a mere one from the Bloc Québécois has signed on. So does that mean that the Bloc Québécois is entirely out of step with the sentiment of the Quebec voter?
Well, polls have shown that Quebecers are more sympathetic to Palestinians. And, you know, there was a poll a couple months into the genocide showing Quebecers a stronger support for a ceasefire. And historically, there has been more. Now, Yves-François Blanchet, the head of the Bloc Québécois, has turned the party much more in a Zionist direction, to the point where a week ago, 10 days ago, he actually met with Erwin Kotler. So he had met with Erwin Kotler, admits election, then comes out and praises Erwin Kotler. Then Erwin Kotler endorses Duceppe's, Gilles Duceppe's son, I'm forgetting his first name, endorses Duceppe, which is obviously, you know, as a sovereigntist party, as a, you know, a separatist party, if you want to call it that, that goes against Kotler's sort of liberal party, you know, Canadian nationalism. So that was considered a big deal. That got a lot of media attention. And I actually tried to, on two occasions, I bumped into later in the day when I read about this, actually an hour after reading about this, I bumped into Yves-François Blanchet's bus on Saint-Denis Street, and I tried to ask him about it. He, of course, didn't respond, and the RCMP wouldn't let me into the press conference. I actually also asked Mario Beaulieu, who's the former head of the Bloc Québécois, who is known as being pro-Palestinian, about Blanchet meeting with Kotler, and he didn't want to talk about it at all. He was clearly uncomfortable at that question. And yeah, so I would say, I wouldn't go so far as to say, you know, Blanchet is totally out of step with Quebec opinion. I'm not claiming that Quebec opinion is like really hard, solid in its pro-Palestinianism. The anti-Muslim kind of wave that's hit Quebec over the past decade is really stark. It's much worse than elsewhere in English Canada. And so you have sort of this kind of conflicting thing where you have this historic more sympathy to the Palestinians because it was sort of like viewed as a national liberation struggle, a little bit like Quebec nationalism was viewed. But then simultaneously you have this real anti-Muslim kind of dynamic going on, which kind of goes, you know, countervailing to the pro-Palestinian sentiment. But yeah, the public is still more supportive. But the other point I was making to Carney in front of the Banquise is the Banquise is close to where I live. It's in the plateau. It's in the most, you know, pro-Palestinian, well, at least most pro-Palestinian, non-predominantly Arab part of Montreal. So it's a sort of the leftish kind of part of the city. And the Banquise is, you know, this late night place. And let's just say that the people who go to the Banquise would be substantially more sympathetic to Palestinians than they would be to Israel, and Carney, of course, should think about that as he's eating his poutine there.
Well, according to an article in the Maple, is there a real difference between the libs and cons on Palestine? Five Palestinians weigh in on this question and the importance of voting in the election more broadly. Excellent piece. I highly recommend it. According to them, they break it down as so far signed on to the Vote Palestine pledge, 240 candidates, 162 NDP, 65 Greens, 14 Liberals, one Bloc Québécois, and a resounding zero Conservatives have agreed to the five principles that the pledge lays out. I want to read a quote to you, Yves. In response to Israel's offensive, Montreal held probably the largest pro-Palestinian demonstration in Canadian history. Jews, Christians, Muslims, Anglos, Francos, grandmothers, and children walked together yesterday in the bitter cold to call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, noted the Montreal Gazette. I don't know if you recognize that paragraph, Eve, but it's from your book, Canada and Israel Building Apartheid, published in 2010. The numbers I didn't include of the people showing up, but in that paragraph, it's between 12 and 17, maybe even as high as 25,000 people marched January 10th, 2009. What are we seeing in Montreal today? The numbers must dwarf those of the way back time.
Well, they did in November, late October, November, in the first 6 weeks of Israel's brutal assault. We had the biggest demonstrations certainly in Montreal history against Israeli policy. It hit about 50,000 people. Since then, there have been demonstrations kind of every weekend. It's now down to on Sunday, it was about 400 people. That was, though, after the demo in Ottawa, which was this national march in Ottawa, and there was buses from Montreal and lots of cars. And that was a good, I'd say, 20,000 people. I was surprised because, it has been 18 months and there's been hundreds and hundreds of demonstrations here in Montreal and other cities. There's been tons and tons of smearing. There's been significant amount of state repression. So the ability to still bring out 20,000 people, I thought, was quite impressive, a display that the movement is still mobilized. But you do also have this the kind of other side to it, which you have this sort of fanatic Zionist bid for authoritarianism, or you call it fascism if you want. Obviously, you're seeing extreme examples of that coming from the States, but you're seeing that Poilievre is doing it, very aggressively. I mean, he's basically saying he wants to follow Trump and start, deporting or expelling people on student visas and other different visas who might write things critical of Israel. And you even have Carney, Carney a few days ago referred to bringing in some variation of a bubble zone legislation. A little bit unclear about the details, but the bubble zone legislation has been pushed by different Zionist groups, and it's been pushed in response to there being protests in front of Jewish community centers or synagogues that have been hosting, Israeli soldiers, or been hosting the real estate, the selling off of Palestinian land in the West Bank. So you have still significant mobilization. But you have this whole like kind of 18 months culmination of this real authoritarian, like I said, fascistic even sentiment that's being pushed, that's percolating into official politics of basically we're going to suspend Canadians' charter of rights and freedoms on behalf of Israel killing more Palestinian children.
Yeah, he's taking a chance. Poilievre is hitching his wagon to Trump in the middle of this trade war. I'm sure had it not been for that, his position would have been made more clear from the beginning, and the reaction of Canadians would probably have been different as well. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Angler. Eve's a Canadian journalist, author, and activist. He's written 13 books, 12 of them about the perfidy of Canada and its foreign policy, the latest being Canada's long fight against democracy. And his re-election coverage is at his website, eveangler.com. I'm looking at the article, Eve, that you have up there, Why the Double Standard About Israel's Foreign Interference. I mentioned in the introduction about Mr. Netanyahu's reaction to the statement that we talked about coming from Carney, a reflexive remark on his part, and then containing within it a greater lie. But the bigger point, and you cover this in your article, is who the hell is this guy to be sticking his nose into the Canadian election? Well, and nobody's saying anything. We've heard for the last few years about foreign intervention in democracy. We've ruined our trade relationship with China. We've signed on to a forever war against Russia, on behalf of the Americans, all in the name of foreign interference. And yet here we've got this schlemiel sticking his nose into our business in the most brazen way.
Yeah, and that's Netanyahu's public comment is just the most sort of open example of that foreign interference. And what I do in the article is I go through some of the known, confirmed ways in which Israel is directly interfering in Canadian politics. And the thing that broke about a year ago, that the diaspora ministry in Israel was spending millions and millions of dollars on these social media influencer campaigns targeting U.S. and Canadian politicians, You have this the Israel Diaspora Ministry that funds different Jewish schools, and they state in Canada and U.S. And they state explicitly that's about building support for Israel. You have this emissary program where there's hundreds of Israelis that are brought to Canadian schools, Jewish community centers, summer camps, and that's done via the Jewish Agency for Israel, which is sort of a parastatal, was kind of becomes what was pre-state, pre-1948, was sort of the nascent state. Then you have and the Canadian Jewish Federations have a formal partnership with the Jewish Agency for Israel, and that goes back many, many decades. And the Jewish Federations, of course, are the sponsor of the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, which is the lead Israel lobby group in Canada, and that has, as the Maple reported a week or so ago, has lobbied or brought to Israel 58% of the incumbent Canadian MPs. So you have like all these different very open and then
if you mean the 58% of those MPs, they've sponsored trips for those people to go to Israel and visit the Holocaust Museum and the nightlife in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, not all that trips. The 58% have been brought on trips or have been formally lobbied by CEJA. Then back 2 years ago, there was restrictions brought in on formal lobbying organizations bringing politicians to Israel or to anywhere on international trips. So what happened right after that was the Jewish Federation of Toronto, which is not a formal lobbyist, is not a registered lobbyist in Ottawa. The registered lobbyist is its advocacy agent, i.e. CEJA. It brought five MPs to Israel. So, and again, the Jewish Federations have a formal connection to the Jewish Agency for Israel, which is which Ben Gurion was the head of for 13 years or so before becoming the first Prime Minister of Israel, the current President of Israel. Previous to that position, he was the head of the Jewish Agency for Israel. So this is deep connection to the Israeli state. And this is just some of what's easily accessible in the public domain. The more you delve into this question, the more the ties are extensive. And so all this foreign interference or Israel's foreign interference into Canada is just never mentioned as foreign interference. So even Jagmeet Singh or from what I could, I didn't look directly, but, Jonathan Pedineau or whoever from the Conservative Party or the Green Party, none of them said no, Benjamin Netanyahu shouldn't interfere in Canadian elections and try to support Pierre Poilievre, which what he's essentially trying to do. So there's no pushback. There's no, as far as I can tell, there was no commentary from anyone. So there's an endless, we have a whole commission on foreign interference. There's the elections, whatever it's called, CITE, the special election body to protect from foreign interference. They don't mention anything about Israel. The media doesn't mention anything about Israel. The politicians don't mention anything about Israel. And yet, Israeli influence in Canada is much more significant than Chinese influence. It's not as significant, of course, as the biggest foreign interference force in Canada, which of course is the U.S. But nonetheless, it's significant, and I do think that Netanyahu is seeking to have Poilievre. He'd prefer Poilievre than Carney as prime minister.
Well, when Netanyahu interferes like that, he's interfering directly in the political process. Sure. Voters could react to it and say, hey, I don't like this foreign guy coming and telling me what to do. I don't care who it is. But then when it comes to casting their vote, if they're going to go along the well-worn bifurcated track, political track we have in Canada, it doesn't really matter because both of the main parties and, well, as we said, the rest of the parliament, it doesn't offer any real resistance to Israel or its policies or Canada's condoning or profiting from those policies.
Yeah, well, I think the NDP and now on the Palestine question is qualitatively better than the Liberals and the Conservatives. I think there has become a demarcation It's not obviously where it should be. It's largely rhetorical. When there's a anti-Semitism hyped up scandal on some Palestine demo, Jagmeet still concedes to the hysteria and stuff like that. So it's not at all where it should be. But I think it is substantially better. The NDP, as you listed, just on the vote for Palestine pledge, NDP MPs and candidates, want to sign that and the like. Now, the difference between the Conservatives and the Liberals, I don't think, obviously, Justin Trudeau, he declared himself a Zionist as he exited. He's in so many different ways, just gone, done so many things to enable Israel's apartheid, Israel's genocide. But I do think there is a difference. I think Poilievre's even worse. And when it comes to the repressive side of suppressing the movement against Canada's complicity in genocide, I think Poilievre will be substantially worse than Carney. Carney is bad. He's going to be bad on this issue. I think the Carney leaves a little bit of space for a little bit less bad than Trudeau was. I think that's kind of how he's trying to position himself amidst the election. I that makes sense for electoral reasons, because he knows that there's a lot of ridings where there is, significant numbers of Arab and Muslim Canadians that can determine different seats. And some of his MPs are clearly out there, even referencing genocide as that scandal that was brought up a few days ago. So I think there is a bit of a difference. I'm not in any way arguing for anyone to vote for Carney or to vote for the Liberals, but I think there is a little bit of a difference. The Liberals are a little bit less bad than Poilievre on this.
Well, as far as the NDP go, I mean, maybe I'll be more cynical and say, well, if they had a real sniff at power, and when we've seen the NDP get in provincially, we've found them to be no different than the Liberals or Tories or conservative parties, whatever their stripe in whatever province. And it's been we've seen that in BC more than once. And also the NDP tend to support, especially during elections, they tend to support the Conservatives. They want to undermine the Liberals and take their share, which they see is naturally residing, any possible votes they can steal from the Liberals, certainly not the Conservatives. So if the NDP ever really had a real sniff at power, I think they would fold like a cheap patio chair. And two, they are working against the Liberals just as a natural state. And so they are supporting a worse party in the Conservatives. But the difference is what happens in Canada. None of the parties here are going to stop anything that's going on in Israel, what Israel does regarding its neighbors or Palestine. But how we are treated here in Canada when we try to bring pressure on government powers, that's a difference. And that's a difference that you mentioned briefly, that we've seen a difference in the two parties, where Poilievre seems to be willing to disregard the charter to bring in temporary exceptions to the charter for your rights and freedoms to protest, and who knows what form they may take, because the Liberals have already garnished bank accounts during the trucker strike, and there's rumor that they're doing this again and other things too. So I mean, the difference is really at home rather than the way the Canadian foreign policy is enacted overseas.
Yeah, I think I would say mostly that's true. I think there are, the concrete example, I think the Poilievre will cut UNRWA funding, whereas the Liberals...
he's called them terrorists.
Yeah, right. So I wouldn't make the UNRWA funding, a central part of Canadian policy on Palestine. I think there's a whole bunch of other issues that are more important than that question. But that, it does matter something, right? So the Liberal Party is a bit divided on this issue. There are Liberal MPs that are clearly both their personal opinion and their constituencies or their ridings, want a much different position on the question. The Liberals, of course, haven't touched any of the big questions, the Canadians fighting in the Israeli military, the registered charities that support all these different organizations in Israel. I think modest differences do matter a little bit. It's not you know, I think we need to upend Canadian support for Zionism. And there's a whole host of ways that we support Zionism. And we've been doing that for more than a century. And that needs to all be upended. And there's no doubt that the NDP is not at all, and not even pretend to be in a desiring to upend Canadian support for Zionism. There's little bits and pieces here and there. You find like a Nikki Ashton, who's been taking the charities question fairly seriously over the past 6 or 8 months. So you see some little, you know, positives, and I totally agree with you. If they were able to, you know, sell Palestinians out for power, there's not a doubt in the world that Jagmeet Singh would reverse any statements that he's made in support of Palestinians over the past few months. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But I think there's differences. There's subtle differences between the different politicians and the parties. And I think that Poilievre, you know, making amidst Trump doing this with the students and trying to deport hundreds and hundreds of international students because of their opposition to genocide. Poilievre coming out and stating that's a pretty big move, because it's not just a really overtly anti-Palestinian move. It's not just a challenge to the charter and, you know, the right to free speech. But it's also a real alignment with Donald Trump in a context where, you know, 80% of Canadians are not, you know, against Donald Trump. So it's a really quite a bold, boldly aggressive political move, which I think speaks to the fact that the guy is quite rabid. I mean, the guy is, you know, he's quite, you know, Melissa Lantzman, for instance, is obviously a deputy conservative leader, and she's a serious Zionist. And I think Poilievre is playing to not just a sort of hard right Jewish constituency, but he's also playing to a fairly hard right kind of, like, I don't know, we'll call it white supremacist, white nationalist kind of movement that is quite present on X. That's all about, you know, deport this, you know, quite overtly xenophobic kind of crowd that Poilievre is playing to when he makes that declaration that we're going to start, you know, expelling international students that oppose genocide.
Well, he's walking on the knife edges, Pierre, because those same people are bound to be not Canadian nationalists. And when they see a foreign leader coming and telling us what to do, it must be a real sense of dissonance among his bloc, his base. Eve, that's all the time we got for today. Do you want to tell us how people can find you and some of the great work you do? I'm always remiss, and you do so much, but give us a rundown quick.
Yeah, eveengler.com, Y-V-E-S-E-N-G-L-E-R. All my articles appear there, and I'm on social media, particularly on X or Twitter.
And Canadian Foreign Policy Hour every Monday at the inopportune time for me out here in the West. What does it come on at 3 o'clock? My time.
3 o'clock on the West Coast. And it's basically a 1 hour kind of resume of developments in Canadian foreign policy.
Go to eveengler.com and find out more. Thanks a lot, Eve, for all of your brave interventions and your diligent work on these issues for so many years.
Thank you.
And I also want to thank Leif Maroof over there in Beirut. That's all I've got for this time. Until the next time.
The election's over. Now we're settling in. After the new inauguration, the old boss is out. The new ones here are ready to take the helm and steer the ship of state to heights never seen before, making America great from shore to shore. The ex-presidents together pass the baton. The dear leader now leaves his wand, and thousands of prisoners are freed who tried to overthrow a democracy. The CBP One app is suddenly gone as the puppeteer moves his pawns. Say goodbye to genocide, Joe. 2.0. The rich line up with deference at this king of common sense.